Tiffany and you. One and one together make two. And all the stories that are true. Tiffany and you.
Everyone, you're listening to this episode of Tiffany and You. This is your host, Tiffany Yu. If you are new to the Tiffany and You podcast, Tiffany and You is a podcast about things that matter. And more specifically, I'm talking with friends who are using their voices and platforms to cultivate creativity, compassion, and change. And with me, I have a new friend that I've actually made during the pandemic, Mother Victory. Hi, Mother Victory.
Hello, how are you?
Good. You and I met because we were both part of the Learn on TikTok program. And I remember when I finally hit 100K on TikTok, you came onto my live and you congratulated me because you've been following me since there was a point where I didn't have a lot of followers at all. And then we both realized that we lived in San Francisco, and now Mother Victory is my one TikTok friend in San Francisco. You've amassed 1.7 million followers on your platform. What is your origin story of how you found your way onto TikTok to then now have this massive audience?
I downloaded TikTok at the end of 2019, and that's when I was still working my day job before the pandemic, and I wanted to dabble in drag. I was like, oh my goodness, what am I going to do in terms of creativity? I've always wanted to be a creator. I've wanted to be a music artist, and I just didn't know how to find my own audience, but that was always a dream. I made a funny music video for Christmas where I'm in full drag that I published December of 2019. And that was my first time I downloaded TikTok, and I just uploaded a little clip of the video. I didn't touch the app until the pandemic again, March. And that's when I got laid off from my day job. I was working full-time as a creative director at a branding company. So I have quite a marketing history, pretty much a whole decade in public relations, marketing, advertising. And so I thought, well, I'm not doing anything at the moment when I was unemployed. So let's try to build this platform. And I started doing drag, and I didn't know how to find an audience yet at that time. I was doing different trends, doing lip syncs, doing dances. I wasn't a very good dancer. I think my lip syncs might have not been the best. And I went into drag hardcore. I bought way too many wigs, outfits, and that's where the nails came from. And makeup also. So I was self-taught makeup artist, self-taught stylist like myself. So one day I did this trend, and then I guess that was my first time going viral, and it was super small. It was a trend. It was like a news reporter, and they said, oh, there's this couple that got stuck in a fire and it was very hot, or something just so hilarious, but obvious. And then fast forward to actually when I hit 10,000 followers on TikTok, I started de-dragging. Drag was a little too expensive for me, so I took off the wigs. I did more, I wouldn't want to say like a smaller makeup, but less draggy makeup. I took the outfits off. It was just me in a t-shirt. And one day I remember I just had my nails on and I was in the mood to film things. So I would go on TikTok and film a bunch of random videos. And I was just like, since everyone and their mother wants my nails, I shall put them up for a bid. And the British accent just kind of naturally came out of me. So I just took the nails off, and then all of a sudden that video went viral. Everybody started putting in their bids. They were like, I'll bid my siblings. I have $6, take it or leave it. Or they're like, my entire life savings. And then it just became a joke. And then people started asking me for things in the comments, like, mother, can I have a dog? Mother, can I have, I don't know, food? You forgot to feed us. And then I think that's where the inside joke came and my little connection to this brand new community of people. And then I started doing video responses, and people would ask me for something and follow immediately after. To anyone whose first time it is watching one of those videos, it'll still be funny. But for me, because I've done so many of those videos, I feel like the joke, it's an old joke. I'll still do them to humor my audience, but it was really funny back then. And that helped me grow my account along the way. Every month I was gaining like 100K. And then with the whole learn on TikTok thing, that's when I started introducing a little bit of education, advocacy into it. And I mean, I did speak out on LGBTQ things when I was a smaller creator as well. I was like, if you're part of the Girls, Gays, and Mays, interact with this video. I talked about how I was on the straight side of TikTok and I wanted to get back to the LGBTQ side. I gave people some encouraging words, like if they're part of the LGBTQ community, there's a community out there that's waiting for them, that loves them, which is now known as my infamous first video. But the learn on TikTok thing really kind of helped navigate me into this more advocacy space. I was giving tips on not just how to come out, but how to gain confidence, creative ways to come out, and just how to deal with different situations. And people would ask me in the comments to give them advice on something, what to do if I'm bi-gender or pansexual, or how to come out to my friends versus my parents. And so that's where the advocacy kind of happened. And then I think that when the Stop Asian Hate movement happened, it took it to a whole new level. We were talking about it in one of our webinars, and I think you and Co had asked me if I could speak on it with my platform. And that's one of the things that led me to make video after video of doing it. I was like, I made one, it went viral, it spread a lot of awareness about the Stop Asian Hate movement. And then I was like, all right, let me make another one because we need to keep talking about this. So every week, I think I made a total of 4 videos speaking about it. And I think that was also maybe one of the few first times that I've experienced a lot of hate as well from the wrong side of TikTok. People were coming at me saying, oh, you're the reason why I hate Asians, or you should throw yourself in a fire, or you believe what the media is saying, and then really try to push the narrative that it's Asians versus white supremacists or something like that. It was 3 days in a row of pure hatred, and then it kind of died down. For some reason though, controversial videos that go viral on TikTok aren't very easily taken down. I don't know if that's TikTok's way of continuing the conversation, but same thing with the LGBTQ stuff. Coming into Pride Month, I was talking a lot about Pride. When they put me on their front page for your Pride hashtag, it hit a lot of supporters, and at the same time, it hit a lot of homophobic people. With the good comes bad, and as you grow as a creator, you just kind of learn to deal with different scenarios. And I remember myself when I hit 1 million followers actually in January, and I was like, oh my goodness, I have a few people that just don't like me and were trying to push different narratives to try to cancel me. And I would even go into a random live. And this is why I don't like to respond to DMs or dual lives with complete strangers, because they will go on and they'll just be like, oh my goodness, someone in the comments says you're homophobic. Someone says you're transphobic. I'm part of the LGBTQ. I've done too much advocacy for that narrative to even be true. But I remember myself at 1 million being like, I don't want to get any bigger than 1 million because people are literally coming for my throat. You have all this support and it's amplified, but you have all this hatred and it's also amplified. And you're trying to navigate and tell people that this is what you stand for. These are your values. This is how you want to use your platform. And then you have your haters who, if they're successful at it, I don't know, that might be the end of Mother Victory, but who are trying to do the opposite and like marginalize you. And that's what I realized with the LGBTQ community. When you're part of a massive minority, people are always going to marginalize you. And people are always going to push a narrative and always try to cancel you. And it's the hardest thing on social media because everyone has opinion is to not say anything. Is silence is power at some point when it comes to social media, because you don't want to give these people all your energy and your attention and the platform. You want to use your energy to continue to spread positivity, awareness, and entertain people. For me, I don't want to become one of those pages where everything is about drama. Every single post is about a social issue. Yes, it's great to use it. And I have used it for advocacy and for social issues front and center, but like, there's a balance for me. I'll talk about things that really need to be said. Some days I plan my content and I look at the phone and I look at the news and I'm like, I have to give this a platform. But then you don't want to respond to a hater and give them a platform, because sometimes if you do that, yeah, they might get reported and might get banned and you might feel like, ha ha ha, revenge. You know? But at the same time, sometimes that doesn't happen. Sometimes you've just wasted your time. Other times you've not only wasted your time, you've gotten a portion of your followers to agree with them. Everyone's on the spectrum of like, they're like morals. Some people are pretty young on TikTok and can easily be persuaded by someone who just comes on with no research background, anything, and just confidently say something. And just that confidence and the way they say it makes everyone believe them. So I'm like, all right, I'm pretty smart. I'm a smart cookie. I know when not to say things. I know when to say things. I know when to be kind of foolish, when to play things down, when to give things my seriousness. So I'm like, all right, this is how the playing field is. Let me just navigate and with the growth, get to a place that I want to be at. And after I said that I just want to stay at 1 million and then you get to 1.5 and now I'm at 1.7, I'm like, oh my goodness. Some creators who hit 1 million followers at the same time that I did are now at 3 million, 5 million, even 2 million. And I'm like, when is Mother Victory going to hit 2 million? You know? I don't know. So that's kind of my growth story broken up into bits and pieces.
There was a lot to unpack there. First of all, thank you for sharing that you were laid off. That's also an area where people have a little bit of shame and let that shame fester because they're embarrassed to tell anyone that that's what happened. But then you said in this in-between period, I'm going to dabble in, find my way onto TikTok, and then being able to really experiment with figuring out what your identity is. The wigs didn't work for you, the costumes didn't work, and it came down to putting some nails on some gloves and focusing on makeup. And then finding your voice in the advocacy space as part of this Learn on TikTok educational program. Let's take a quick break here. And when we come back, we'll continue chatting with Mother Victory.
Awesome.
And we are back from the break. You're listening to this episode of Tiffany and You, the podcast. I'm here with Mother Victory, 1.7 million followers on TikTok. And before the break, Mother Victory was giving us a rundown of their entire journey onto TikTok. But I thought I would come back in and talk to you a little bit about your experiences being at the intersection of the LGBTQ plus and API communities, because I know you and I have talked offline about the visibility or lack of visibility that that intersection gets.
Mm-hmm. In the API community, it's still very conservative. I mean, with the younger crowd and the public facing creators, behind the scenes, you don't know what's going on, but from what it looks like everybody's supporting everybody. And TikTok makes it look like everybody's standing in solidarity, but that's not the case because culture is a very difficult thing to change. You would think like Black Lives Matter would support the LGBTQ, but look at DaBaby right now. You know what I mean? Do you know that story? So he's basically feeding into the stigma that HIV and AIDS is like a gay disease at the moment, and he's getting a lot of backlash for the comments he's made and his lack of apology, his insincere apology. But in the API community, there's a lot of homophobic people in the community as well. Take my parents and almost my entire family. And in the API community, people don't like to talk about it. Yes, my mother knows. Yes, my dad knows. I don't talk to my fathers, like my biological father and my stepfather. There's no communication between us. And it's because they are aggressively homophobic. And being aggressively homophobic means you don't talk about it. You let your anger just fester up to where you can feel the tension in the room when we're together. Mm. It's a very kind of dangerous space to be in when you're at the intersection of API and LGBTQ. And it's a tough one to navigate. If you're LGBTQ and API and you come out when you're young, congratulations. That is a big feat, because for most of us, we come out when we're older, because when we're younger, our parents have never given us that confidence. It's like, don't walk like that. Don't hold your hand like that. You're not allowed to go to the lingerie section or the nail section or the makeup section in the mall. And it's a very kind of violent pushback. It's like you get a slap on the hand, or like you're just met with all this anger. Like, how dare you touch that makeup? Or like, why would you want to go into Victoria's Secret? So there's that. And then there's also all this unspoken support. My family members won't ask me if I'm gay or not. They will ask another close family member, oh, are they gay, or do they have a girlfriend or something like that? And every single family gathering, someone always asks me, because I have family members that are my age that are married now. And they'd be like, oh, why are they always coming alone? Or do you have a girlfriend? So it's very put you in a box. Even my mom will try to push me in that direction while she's watching television. She will make super positive comments when a straight couple is kissing or something. And I also want to put this example. A lot of family members think Titanic is a classic, and it's become this classic. But the movie is rated X. It's pretty much on the verge of heterosexual pornography. And that is so accepted in the straight world. And it just goes to show, when a gay couple, LGBTQ couple, kiss, it's just met with backlash, it's met with hatred, it's met with like, this is gross. How can you do this to our children? You pedophile, you predator. That's a narrative they want to give us. They'll call us disgusting, everything to marginalize us. Once they get any little pinch of thing that fits in their narrative to cancel you, they will go ahead and do it, because they just want that space to them. All right, a full-blown sex scene can happen in Titanic, but nothing else. If you want a little peck on the lips or hand holding here in the LGBTQ community, it is just not right, and something is wrong with you. So that ferocity lives inside me, and I'm like, I will continue to just live my life fearless, unbreakable, and that's what is inside and behind the whole Mother Victory thing. And the name Victory came from that, because I was losing a lot in my life, not just in my work, relationships, but also my identity. I would go into a room and everybody would leave the room. Heck, I'm surprised that I have 1.7 million followers. I didn't think I was likable. I'm definitely not a thirst trap. I'm definitely not the funniest. I'm definitely not the smartest. I didn't go to the best school. I didn't have the best job. I really had to claw my way. I still don't get paid as much as some other people. And having all that, and then like gaining a following, but while you're gaining a following, you're also getting the hatred at the same time. That's hard, but there's a message behind it. And I'm like, I think this message is more important than anything. And that's what drives me. I will be tired. I will still do my makeup. You know, I will just roll up my sleeves. It's like, a superhero going into war, because culture is this massive thing that is so difficult to change that you just have to put in the work every day. Mm. And I'm like, yes, the money will come. And it has started trickling in with the brand deals. And I'm like, this would be a dream to be a full-time job, gig, whatever. I am on my way there. We're both brand new to this business, so I still have a lot of learning to do, but I think that's what drives Mother Victory, and that's what keeps me going.
Thank you so much for sharing that. I think it's so important to highlight that as much as you're embraced in the public sphere, there are lingering ties to family that we're still trying to navigate. I'm curious to hear a little bit more about your coming out story, if you feel comfortable, because I know you mentioned it happened later in life for you. Mm-hmm. And even knowing now that you have a large public platform, navigating that tension between these antiquated views that our parents have, homophobia, racism, ableism, even sexism, all still exist in my parents' generation. What was that journey like of deciding to come out? And even with the continued strained relationship with your family, what makes you be so unapologetically yourself?
Me being unapologetically myself really came from just having a family that constantly wanted to push this narrative of straightness on me. Like, oh, you should cut your hair like this. Oh, you look like a very handsome boy. To like, oh my goodness, look at that straight couple. It's so cute. And I would just like roll my eyes, and they're like, no, this is cute. The gay couples are what's gross. Having that constantly when I was growing up. And then when I decided to come out, it was a long process, because in my mind, I was fighting with myself, gathering the courage to actually speak on it and say the words, I'm gay. And I had to test the waters. And I have this whole series of creative ways to come out. But in reality, it's like, it starts from just advocating with the community. It's like, oh, hey, mom, did you hear the news about the no hate campaign? Did you hear that gay marriage is legal now? What do you think about the LGBTQ community? Because it would be all over the headlines. It's a perfect moment to start a conversation and get to the coming out story. But I just felt a lot of anger, a lot of frustration, a lot of confusion, and a lot of like, what if I just like suppress my feelings and just live my life and move out and not say anything and have this like a Spider-Man. I just have this life and they'll just know nothing about it. And that's what it comes to for some people. But I just felt like I wouldn't have the courage or the mental ability. And the mental thing affects everything. It affects whether you wake up in the morning and actually do something or stay in bed all day. And if something's bothering you to that degree, you're stuck in your bed. You're not thinking about anything else. You're not getting further in life, whether that's work, whether that's relationships or anything. It's just on top of your mind, controlling your entire being. My mom was going through some things, relationship issues at the time. And I thought, let's start the conversation out with your problems. Let's talk about your relationship and let's show some sympathy, empathy. And then that opened up her kindness box. And I was going to say we were at a Cheesecake Factory and she could just feel that I was going to say it. And she kind of like took it from me. She took my moment from me. But she said, I don't care if you like guys or girls, I just want you to be happy. Mm-hmm. And that tiny moment just made me feel so much confidence and joy and want to go on with what I was doing. And at the time, I was making my own e-commerce site and stuff. And in the Asian world, when you do get approval from your parents or whoever raised you or whatnot, it's something that can't be broken. It's like Asian parent approval is one of the hardest things to attain in life. I would have been a different person if my mother didn't accept me for who I am. Because Asian parents, it's like 75 to 80% disappointment all your life. You know, whether that's grades, a job, relationship, they just want to approve the process and everything. Knowing that and all the shame that they thought that I would like bring to the family when I was younger, not having a girlfriend, not going to the school of my choice, or not working for a major tech company and having to start off small and things like that. It started to just break this entire concept and idea that a lot of API families have to begin with. They give birth and they think, okay, we just made a baby. It's going to be easy. We're going to have a perfect life. This is how it's going to look like. We're going to be showered in designer clothing and big houses for the rest of our lives because our kid's going to be rich and work as a doctor, or, you know, just like, and all these perfect relationships. And then what they realize is there's people out there who want to ruin me from my exes. I had one ex stole my money, call my aunt's business, and she employs like 80 people, Asian supermarket, and outed me to the entire store. And it was just like, everybody was talking like, oh my God, there's a gay person in the family. Oh my goodness, what are these awful gay things they're doing? And all her employees are Asian. And you could feel the embarrassment. It was just like, I can't just visit my relatives and not say anything. So had that happen, people would see me at Pride and they would tell my stepdad, and that's where a lot of the anger and the homophobic tension start arising. Word would get back to him. I don't even know who. It could have been a close friend that wanted to sabotage me. And then they would call my phone like 20 times and just start screaming at me like, where the hell are you? Get your ass back home. Mm-hmm. I was going to Pride as a teenager. It's just like a lot of that trauma. Mm-hmm. So that continues with me throughout my life. It's just like people didn't like me then. They still don't like me now. They don't like the way I look. They don't like that I'm a part of whatever they're doing. They don't even want to see me. I'm not the ideal way that anyone wants to be a friend with or invite to their party or their wedding. It's just like the vibe's not straight enough. It's just a lot of not fitting in and people just not even wanting to bother with you. So that's how I feel. Even now to this day, I'm like, yeah, there's this tiny portion of the LGBTQ community that accepts it and whatnot. And the majority of people who see me walking down the street, they'll think, oh, that's an average Asian heterosexual man just going to the grocery store. So that's a struggle that I live with. I've even introduced my mom to 4 of my ex-boyfriends, but because of the stigma and because Asian parents are so harsh, I've even had boyfriends start the breakup process because they're like, well, your mom doesn't accept me, whether it's race or LGBTQ. And she does it in such a passive aggressive way. And I think anyone can pick up on passive aggression from you showing her pictures of you two. And she'll just be like, why has he got to look so angry all the time? Or you tell her one little problem that you have in the relationships. And she's like, oh, I don't like this person. Only bad people would do things like that. Everything is just picking and choosing where she puts her negativity to the point where she just completely doesn't accept anything that you bring. It's not just you and you presented in the way that she wants you to be presented in. It's like, I will not approve. I will tear you down. I will tell you you're ugly. I will say your boyfriend's ugly. I will say he's not well-mannered, just anything that she can say to destroy the relationship. And then when you break up and you're all emotional, she's kind of happy about it.
I think what's coming up for me is, as much as we are our own individual people, yeah, we're still tied to our families, whether we want to or not. I appreciate you bringing these nuances into this conversation too, because I don't think a lot of people realize the ties we have to our families, how much disapproval or criticism or microaggressions or passive aggressiveness that does exist within that. But you talked about how you came to be who you are because of the mental part of it, which does weigh on you. Having to feel shame for who you love for such a long period of time. And maybe it still comes back in one way or another. I want to come back to the haters. You're embraced by 1.7 million people and more. We're not even counting followers you have on other platforms. The mental aspect is what turned you into this, and I'm quoting, this fiercely dedicated advocate for the LGBTQ plus and API communities, using your popular TikTok persona to spread healthy messages of affirmation, inclusion, and personal preservation. And I wanted to ask about how you manage the mental part, knowing that you have equal amounts in the digital sphere, not just your family, spewing hate at you.
I've always admired superheroes that were the underdogs, like the X-Men. I think that whole series is actually LGBTQ, or even Batman. I think anyone has that as a kid, you think of being the best version of yourself. And I think to be the best version of yourself, you have to go through a lot of things. I think this Mother Victory persona, or just this power behind it, even if it wasn't named Mother Victory, it's something you tap into that's super special because you're kind of rising from the ashes. It's like a phoenix coming from the ashes. It's like when Harley Quinn's been beaten down so much and then she becomes this brilliant, psychotic, mental character. And that's kind of how I felt, because as a kid, my stepdad would constantly scream at me, and these microaggressions would happen because of his upbringing and the homophobia. So he would take it out on me in different ways, whether that's throwing the dog across the room or throwing my toys out the window or kicking my shoes into a massive mess or pretending to suffocate me with a pillow. The things get more awful. One day when he was screaming at me, I just started to not feel sad anymore. And I was just agreeing. And it was just this form of kind of switching the narrative from like, all right, I'm terrible, I'm whatnot, but now I'm agreeing with you. And I'm like, all right, great, I'm terrible. So what? All right, I did that. And what? Yeah. So it was like this way of completely talking back, but not saying much, and giving the person this fierce look where it's just like, what are you gonna do? And in that moment, that's followed me throughout my life. You can only be beaten down so many times. You can only be talked back to so many times. And once someone hits that button and you tap into that superhero version of you, it's like, I have no insecurities. I am unapologetic. I am powerful. You have something to say, say it to my face. So I think that was definitely a teaching lesson. I've been very insecure. I've been very quiet in my younger years. I was someone who people never thought I'd become anything, or they just wouldn't look at me very highly other than my artistic abilities. But you get into that place. And even now, I don't usually tap into it too often because you kind of get a little bit emotional at the same time, but it's like people are scratching the surface and trying to get in there. And once they really like hit it, now though, it's completely different because it's not just letting them have it. Now that I have a platform, I need to choose, even if I do feel that fiery passion and yeah, it's unstoppable and unbreakable. It's like, when do I put the brakes on myself? Because I don't want to hurt someone else's feelings. As much as we all love a taste of revenge and giving people a taste of their own medicine, sometimes I'll do it in a playful way as to create some sort of entertainment from it. And that's where the comedic side of Mother Victory comes from. I'm both speaking truth. I'm kind of canceling someone, but I'm doing it in this fashion that's still classy and sassy. I really have to not say some things that I really want to say sometimes. So I'm coming at it from so many different angles. My mind's really open. And I think there's a new level of maturity. You get to that moment, you just want to fight the world because the world's made you feel a certain way. And then you grow to this level where you now have some responsibility and you need to pick and choose your battles. So it's a whole different dynamic now with like a platform and using my voice for things and where do I give my attention? Because if I try to speak about something that's only directed to me, am I just getting self-gratification from revenge? I have to think about the community, the bigger picture. So yeah, it's totally different now.
I think that because now your platform is what it is, it's really saying, what type of behavior am I modeling for these million plus other people that is acceptable or not? Even if you're torn down and people are trying to break you apart, you're still existing. And the universe decided you have value and worth here just because you are who you are. And I think that there is an opportunity to be really broken down by that, or like you kind of have your superpower instincts come out and be this phoenix rising from the ashes. And then the last thing that you said was that there is power in silence. I can also see that going both ways, especially during Stop Asian Hate. I would have loved more, not only of our community, but also people who didn't look like us to be speaking out. And that's a type of power too, is how are you using this power you have of silence to choose when you say something or when you don't? I love the vulnerability that you showed up in this conversation with. This is actually part of the reason why I love having this podcast, is it's really a way for me selfishly and everyone who's listening to this to deepen our connection with you and get to know who is Mother Victory. I always close with the same question, which is, what are you grateful for today?
I'm grateful that I woke up and I have another chance at life today.
Wow, I love that. And if our listeners or the people viewing this want to follow you and support your work, where is the best place to do that?
I would say my TikTok, mother_victory. Hopefully I get the Mother Victory handle, but one of my fans has it and TikTok won't let me have it for some reason. But you can also go to mothervictory.com and read the story about me and my blog updates as I continue this journey. And it's linked to all my social media, so you can find me all in one place on my website.
Maybe by the time this episode goes live, you will be at 2 million. And if not, head over to TikTok, give mother_victory a follow, and let's help you get there.
Definitely. Thank you so much, Tiffany.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Tiffany and You. This is your host, Tiffany Yu. If you enjoyed this conversation, please leave us a rating and write us a review over at Apple Podcasts. It allows these conversations and these episodes to be discovered by other podcast listeners. I'm hoping that we can co-create something here that's valuable for you. So to the extent that you have feedback or other topics you'd like us to explore, don't hesitate to reach out. You can find us at tiffanyyu.com/podcast. And a special shout out to Root Hub for our opening and closing podcast medleys. We release episodes weekly, so I hope that you'll join us next week for the next episode.
Tiffany and you. This one is done and another coming soon. A special rendezvous for Tiffany and you.